Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, alhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salamu ala rasulillah. Going back to where we left off, we talked about gold and silver quite a bit, that this was the breakdown of gold and silver, and how gold and silver are a currency no matter what the time is, what the situation is, where you are in the world, and what shape or form that gold and silver is in. Gold and silver is a currency because God has declared it to be a currency. So no matter what happens, gold and silver will always be considered a currency and therefore will always be zakatable. Now currency, whatever currency is in common use at that time, place, or situation, such as for us, it would be the dollars. So it doesn't matter what, for whatever purpose they're used, whether at home or in banks, it doesn't matter as which country the currency of is, as long as it's being used. So if you're sitting here in the States and you have pounds or you have rupees or you have dinars or you have riyals, as long as that currency is in use, it is in use, then at that time it is zakatable. So that's also, that doesn't serve as a loophole that, you know, I turn all my dollars into euros, say I don't pay zakat because it's not in dollars, it's in euros and I live in America. It'll still be zakatable. This is interesting. All right, people usually say, okay, I'm putting money aside for Hajj. I've put $10,000 aside so I can go for Hajj, what we talked about yesterday. So even I have to pay zakat on that? Yes, you still have to pay zakat on that. That's extra money you have in your possession and you do take out zakat on it, even if it's for a good purpose like Hajj. And of course, if you set money aside for marriage or whatnot. Deposited in trust. If you have trusts that have been formed and money deposited therein, they are still zakatable. Rent from real estate. If you're in the business of real estate, and you own 10 homes, and you get $1,000 of rent from each one of those homes, you pay zakat on that rent that comes in from those homes. Debts receivable, meaning you know you're going to be receiving these debts at fixed times. I loan somebody money, and he's giving me $100 every month, and I know I expect that to be coming, and he's been regular about it. Then I factor that into my zakatable assets, because I expect that to be coming in. Debts receivables, here's some details about it. Loans that have been advanced with the hope of repayment. You advance somebody. You have an employee working for you. He say, can you advance me $1,000 off of next month's paycheck? And you know, then you can deduct that later. You know, that's in your hands. You're going to deduct it from his next paycheck. So you do factor that into zakat. You don't say, oh, I've lent money out. I have to deduct $1,000. No, you have every control over getting that back. Receivables from the sale of commercial goods. You're in the business of sale. You're a wholesaler. You sell this money and they have these 60-day terms and contracts with you, and that's how you do business. Then, of course, you've sold it. You know it's coming in. Factor that into your zakatable assets. A person can pay the zakat after he receives it. He says, I want to play it safe. Once I have the money in my hand, then I will pay the zakat. But what he has to understand in that situation is that he will also have to then back pay some zakat as well, because from the time that he gave it out, that was basically in his possession the whole time. He just chose to finally give it when he received in his hand, but he will have to pay for that whole time that it had not been paid. So if it was on, you know, 90-day terms and he paid zakat today, then whenever he gets it, he's got to factor that 3 months in. The following are not zakatable unless you actually end up receiving them. You take possession ownership of them. You don't know if this person is going to pay you back. You've sold some personal belongings. You're not in business. You're not a wholesaler. I sold my car, and the brother told me that he'll pay me for the car 3 months later. I don't have to pay zakat on that right now. When I get it, because I'm not in a business. These are not business terms. That's not why I regularly do it. I just sold something on the side to someone, and I have absolutely no idea of how that's going to work out. Wages or fees. Money that you'll make next month, your next month's paycheck, 6 months later, doesn't matter. Anything you have not already received and taken ownership of, you don't calculate, you don't factor it in. It's what you have now. Mahar owed to the wife. Okay, it is also not zakatable. Inheritance shares. If you have inheritance shares, meaning that a relative, your father is on his deathbed, he's passing away. Now you know you're going to end up receiving a fourth of his money. And you know that that comes out to be $25,000. He's not passed away yet. You haven't ended up receiving it yet. Don't worry about it. you don't pay zakat then. Doctor said he has 30 days to live. We'll see about that. It's in the hands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Until you do not take ownership of that money, you don't pay zakat on it. Plus, I don't think your father would appreciate if you pay zakat for his inheritance before he's passed away. It sends the wrong message. Amount deducted from wages without consent or choice from employee. All right, so FICA and Social Security and all that gets deducted from your paycheck. If you work for a company, then at that time, you don't pay zakat on that. Because you have no control over that. It's taken out without even checking with you. Or if there's any other type of situation such as that. Business goods, inventory, you have to pay zakat on them. Anything bought with the intention of reselling. If at the time of buying, the intention is to resell, the intention to resell was not made, it will not be a business good. So if you bought something never with the intention to resell it. If I bought a car, even if I ended up turning around 3 months later and reselling it, but my original intention was let me drive this car. Then something happened, some situation came up and I resold it. If I bought an expensive computer, as far as I was concerned, I was going to use it. But then a better deal came along and I ended up reselling it. Even if I made money on it, that's okay. My intention was not to resell it. I was not in business at that time. But if the intention was made to resell at the time of buying, but the person changed his intention, didn't make it, it still won't be categorized as a business good. So I bought it, this is what I'm talking about. I never made the intention to resell it, but I did and even made a profit. It's not a business good. But anything that is bought right off the bat with the intention of reselling it, doesn't matter how long you've retained it in your possession. If you have a slow product, then you have a slow product, but you are paying zakat on it. So if you have a electronics store, all the cameras, all the computers, all the TVs that are sitting on your shelves, you pay zakat on them. It's a big misunderstanding people have. If you own a convenience store, all the resellable items that you have stacked on your shelves, they are zakat. You pay zakat on your inventory. It's a very simple concept. Pay zakat on your inventory. Anything that you have attained with the intention of reselling it. Raw material for manufacture. Okay, if I'm in the construction business and I ended up buying a bunch of steel and rubber and wood and all that, all those things are zakatable. And finished factory products, that's what I'm talking about. Retail items. I have to pay zakat on the retail items I have purchased in order to resell. Stocks. Now we'll talk about stocks. This is the next type of zakatable item. And this is more of a current day issue. How do we pay zakat on stocks? First of all, the question comes up, and I don't want to get into a lot of detail. There is detail here, and there's a lot of differences of opinion. But people typically, first question they ask, is it even permissible to invest into the stock market? Is it even halal? The general typical answer is yes, it is permissible. There are requirements with certain conditions, certain stipulations. The first and most obvious stipulation is whatever stock you're buying, it's got to be halal. So you can't buy Budweiser stock. Okay, that you can't, that's haram, you can't buy it. So common sense, you can't buy stock into anything that's haram, but it has to be halal, all right? And then some of the scholars, they actually set other stipulations and conditions. It's very detailed, there's a lot of difference of opinion. For the most general part, if you are buying stocks as an investment, as long as the company is in the business of something that's halal, that's permissible, then it is permissible to invest your money there. It's just like becoming a partner in a company. If you're looking at it that way. Shares that are bought for capital gain, market value is zakatable. So you bought shares for the sake of, okay, it's at a good price right now, maybe 6 months down the line, I can turn it over, I'll see how it goes. So you're buying and selling stocks. You're buying and selling stocks. It's not like a long-term investment. You bought some stocks maybe 30 years ago, and you have no intention of reselling it. It's just you bought it 30 years ago, you're leaving it alone, you're letting it grow with the company, go wherever it goes. No, these are stocks that you're buying and selling. You're active in the stock market. When the time to pay zakat comes, you basically look at all the stocks you have. You have 10 shares in 10 different companies. You will take the market value right now of each and every stock. What is the market value of it? Right here, right now. And you'll pay zakat on it. So whether it's dipped low, like right now, then you pay on that. But if then there's a big rise, a big boom, then you end up paying zakat on that higher amount. So you'll pay on the market value. However, if you did buy some shares for a long-term investment, like I talked about, you're in the long haul, you bought it 30 years ago, you leave it alone. Then the scholars actually do explain that then at that time you can kind of you can kind of take a look at the stock that you have and the company that you are invested into. Okay? The non-zakatable assets of the company are deductible from the market value of the stock. And this is breakdown of that. So the market value of the share is $100. But now you sort of look at the overall of the company, 30% of what the company is worth is based on its properties. Okay? 30% of what the company is worth is based on its machinery or factories. Okay? And then the rest, this other 40%, is based on the liquid assets that they have, raw materials, manufactured goods. So now what you can actually do is you can actually take a look at the company, and according to it, you can deduct this 60% and only end up paying zakat on 40% of the market value of that stock at that time. So this is a little bit detailed breakdown. If you're a very long-term investor, then you do have this concession. But once again, most of the people, they end up buying and selling, and they end up working in it that way. At that time, you just take the market value, and that's what you consider zakatable at that time. Pension funds. Okay, so 401s, IRAs, Roth IRAs, zakat, these type of retirement funds, they are zakatable. You pay zakat on all type of retirement funds. Okay? This is primarily because whose possession is it? Whose property is it considered? Yours. It's your property. It's owned by you. Okay? Regardless of your company matches the amount you put into it or not, it ends up being in your name. You own it. So, this is what it's talking about. Now, here's the only thing that I will point out is the taxable amount you are allowed to deduct. You can deduct the taxable amount. What that means is, you know that when you end up taking out the money, 30% right off the top is going to be chopped off and put away as tax. That's going to be taken right off the top. So you know by the time you retire, you'll have $100,000. It's an easy number to calculate. You're going to have $100,000 in that account. $30,000 or $25,000 are going to go straight to taxes. So then you can actually calculate your zakat and only pay it on $75,000. But you got to pay it every year on whatever you have in that account, minus the tax that you expect. The tax bracket that you fall in, look at that. The tax percentage that's typically deducted for a person in that tax bracket, subtract that, deduct that off the top, and pay zakat on the rest. Okay, so that's the breakdown of these type of retirement funds. Pension plans are not zakatable until received. Okay, one thing that actually I was talking with one scholar about 401ks and IRAs, he actually told me one other thing. He said another concession that is available in these situations is because what Islam specifies is you do not take into consideration your future earnings. What you'll earn in the future is a mystery, so you don't worry about that when you pay zakat. Likewise, you don't take into consideration future debts. You pay what you own now, and you deduct what is due upon you right here, right now. Based on that, he said, when you have a 401k, if it's $100,000, you know the tax bracket that you fall in, you're going to lose 30% for taxes. He said, also take into consideration that if you were to withdraw your 401k today, what would be the penalty that you were charged? Let's say that was 20%. 10%, that's what he told me. It's 10% that you would be charged. They would penalize you 10%, and you'd pay tax on 30%. So that's 40% now that you would lose right off the top. So then you only have to pay zakat on 60. Because he said what you have to take into consideration is, what is your actual ownership right now? As far as you're concerned, if you wanted to actually hold this money in your hand, have the freedom to spend it however you wanted to, right here, right now, you would also be penalized for it. So another extra concession is not only would your taxable amount be deductible, but also your penalty amount would also end up being deductible. So that's some of the details of this. Now, pension plans like military retirement pay, police and fire retirement pay, you know, when they keep giving you 50% of your paycheck even after you've retired, those type of things, they are not zakatable until you receive them. Okay? And this is, you know, employer investing in by deducting from the wages without the employee's consent. So even like military and firemen and policemen, Sometimes a little bit of their paycheck, there's a deduction in their paycheck without their consent. It's just mandatory because they're going to end up recuperating this in their retirement pay. So that's without their consent, so they do not have to pay zakat on that. And they don't have to consider that zakat tabu until they actually receive it into their hands. Trust. So whether these trusts are created under a will or not, zakat is payable each year on the zakatable assets of the trust, less allowable liabilities. So any type of liabilities that might be there, minus them, you pay zakat on whatever the worth of the trust is. If a family trust is created for tax planning purposes, zakat is payable by the true donor, the person whose assets are transferred into the trust. So it's based on that. Whose assets are being transferred into it? These are for tax planning purposes, for family purposes. However, it's based on the person whose assets are going into the actual trust. Any other cases that there might be, zakat's payable by the beneficiaries of the trust in proportion to their respective shares. So that's a different situation. If a trust is created that this is my money, when I die, it's going to transfer to these people. Then at that time, it's payable by the beneficiaries based on them and the shares that they'll end up receiving. So that's how zakat is payable based on trust. And then the other thing about trust is a lot of times there's so many stipulations, there's so many different articles and different things that can change in the situation of a trust. It's all worked into the trust that an attorney draws up. So you really have to sit down with your specific type of trust and find out what is zakatable based on your specific scenario and situation. Pledges and deposits. Any zakatable asset like gold or silver or even cash that is pledged to a creditor as a security is not zakatable. Okay? So any type of a security, so when you put down like a security deposit, that is not zakatable. That's being held in lieu of some business consideration or for some security purposes or as an insurance based on whatever you have taken from that person or what you owe to that person. In Arabic, it's called rahan. So rahan is not zakatable. You don't end up paying zakat on it. So if you have money, somebody's holding $1,000 of yours as a security, you do not have to pay zakat on that $1,000 that's being held. You don't have access to it right now. Once you do gain access to it, it's given back to you, then of course that's a different story. Okay? Similarly, the amount forwarded as a deposit is also, so if you're the landlord and you have $10,000 sitting on an account on the side that is a security deposit of all your tenants, you don't have to pay zakat on that. You don't own that money. You don't have the freedom to use that money because that money very well might go back to these tenants. And it might not. You just don't know. So that's a holding. So there's no zakat on that. So whether you're the person giving the security deposit or the one receiving it, it's not zakatable in either scenario. Now the completion of the lunar year. Imam Abu Hanifa, rahmatullah alayhi, he says that if the nisab is complete at the beginning and ending of the year, it's considered as if he possessed the nisab for the whole year, regardless of whether it decreased during the year or not. So he says when the year starts, January the 1st, 2009, you have over the amount of nisab, you got $5,000. Come January next year, 2010, you still have over the amount of nisab. You got $8,000. He says it doesn't matter what happened during the year. If it dipped down below $2,000 and then it came, he says it doesn't matter. You pay zakat. Okay, whatever happened during the year happened, it worked itself out, then you just paid the zakat. Whatever is earned during this period is added to the existing nisab and zakat is paid on it at the end of the year if nisab is complete. This kind of answers some of the questions that people a lot of times have, that any type of earnings that took place during the year, you just pay zakat at the end of the year based on whatever you are holding in your hand at that time. You pay zakat on it. So that's Imam Abu Hanifa's opinion. However, he says, it got cut off there at the bottom a bit, if the nisab reaches zero or minus zero, then zakat will not be obligated again until the person reaches the point of nisab. So the only time when the person actually starts over. Okay, so what he's saying here is basically, and there's some charts I think kind of explain this. Okay, we'll get to it later. But he's saying, Imam Abu Hanifa's opinion, there's a difference of opinion in this issue. He says, you had $2,000 nisab at the beginning of the year. Come next year, one whole year, you still have $2,000. Lunar year, of course, I gave the example of January, but lunar year, you still have $2,000. Now, during that year, it went down to 1,500, went up to 3,000. No matter what happened, you pay zakat on whatever you have at the end of the year. He says the only exception is if you became in debt and went minus, or even if it reached zero, you absolutely had no money in your hand whatsoever. Then you will now consider the beginning of the year once you come back up to the point of... So in May, you went totally broke. You had $0. Then in July, you ended up getting $2,000. So now you start your new year from July. You consider yourself zakatable from July and wait till the one lunar year is completed. The day on which a person acquires the nisab for the very first time, and after deducting his liabilities from his total zakatable assets, he still owns the nisab. So zakatable assets are not reduced to less than the nisab. So these are the two things. He'll start back over on this day. He acquires the nisab for the very first time, and he deducts all the liabilities, any debts, anything that's due upon him, and he still ends up with nisab. So he has $4,000, he owes $2,000, he still got $2,000. Okay, he's zakatable. He has nisab now. Now he's going to start his year back over. That's his valuation date for the purpose of giving zakat. After the lapse of one complete lunar year from this date, now zakat becomes due if he still possesses the nisab at the end of the year. If he doesn't, then of course, he doesn't have to give zakat. He doesn't meet the criteria. Each of the zakatable assets should be considered as a separate category on its own when calculating the lapse of a lunar year. So if you have different types of zakatable assets, you have your stocks, then you have your gold and silver, then you have your savings account, put everything in a separate category and evaluate it year to year. That's one way to go about it. It's not necessary that a year lapses on each separate acquisition of zakatable assets. However, if you'd rather just do it all at one time and you know there's a month here and there, it's okay. You can fix a date. You can fix a date. At this date, I sit down, I calculate all my assets, and I give whatever zakat is due based on whatever I have in my possession at that time. Whatever of the zakatable assets is acquired throughout the year, it's added to the existing zakatable assets of the same category. So you just keep building on into that category and you pay at the end of the year. And each category doesn't have to reach a nisab. It can be a combination. That's one of the questions we got during the break was, what happens if it's a combination? I have $500 of gold and silver, $500 in the savings account, and then $1,000 in stocks. That's fine. Then you pay zakat. You can combine all the different categories to consider yourself responsible for paying zakat. Now, these are some of the examples of what I was talking about. The nisab, let's just say, for easy calculation purposes, is $2,000. On the 10th of Rabiul Awal, a person has $2,000. So he's sahib in nisab for the first time, okay? Now he's responsible, he meets the criteria, he has to start calculating his zakat. Now, throughout the year, this amount kept on increasing. On the 9th of Rabiul Awal, the next year, now he has $6,000. How much zakat is he going to pay? He's going to pay on $6,000. So when the year expires, whatever he's got at that time. So once you reach nisab, start calculating a year from there. As soon as you reach a year, whatever you got in your hands at that time, you pay zakat on it. Okay? Here's a nice little nifty chart to show you that. Okay? This is 2000. This is your nisab right here. He started from here. 10th of Rabiul Awal, he reaches that point. Next year, come Rabiul Awal, he's here at $6,000. He'll pay zakat based on that. So that's how. As long as he kept increasing. So nisab never came into question again. That's scenario number one. Scenario number two is that he had $2,800. After deducting $800, he's got how much? $2,000 left. And that's the nisab. So he's become sahib nisab for the first time. Throughout the year, it kept increasing, and it even decreased and went below the nisab. On the 9th of Rabiul Awal, he owns 4,000, zakat is due upon him. Okay? So he increased. At this point, he had $2,800. He minus his debts that left him right here at the nisab. Okay, he qualifies. Now it decreased and increased and decreased and increased. However, at the end of the year, he stands here at $4,000. He will pay zakat, and he will pay zakat on $4,000. He'll pay zakat on whatever he owns. It doesn't matter if he dipped down below the nisab, this is the opinion of Abu Hanifa. It doesn't matter if he dipped down below the nisab. As long as he didn't reach flat zero, he still has some type of wealth, then he will consider himself that zakat is due upon him, and he'll pay at that time. Scenario number three is, nisab is $2,000 again. At this time, he owns $2,000. He has to pay nisab. Throughout the year, once again, the amount's going up and down. Next year, when the lunar year is completed, he only has $1,500. This is a situation. He increased, decreased, but when time came to pay, he's below the nisab, he doesn't pay any zakat. Even though, look at this, during the middle of the year, he went up to almost $4,000. It doesn't matter. When the year completed, he ended up below the zakat, below the nisab level, he will not pay any zakat. This is another scenario. Once again, at the beginning, at this time, at this date, he owns $2,000. He's sahib nisab. Now this amount increases and decreases. When the ninth of Rabiul Awwal, 1 year gets completed, he has $3,000, but he owes $1,500 out of that to someone. So if he minuses his debt, he's below the nisab. So once again, he does not have to pay the zakat in this situation. All right? He has a nisab, $2,000. He has $2,800 rather. He deducts $800, he has $2,000 left. Okay, he's sahib nisab. On the 20th of Sha'ban, okay, in the middle of the year, he lost everything and his balance is zero. His balance is zero. He's broke. He has nothing left. Okay? Now, on the 3rd of Shawwal, so a couple of months later, he regains finally $2,000 after deducting debts. Now he's become sahib nisab again. So now when is he going to end up next time evaluating himself for zakat? The 2nd of Shawwal, the next year. Okay, so now he's going to look from this date on. This is the breakdown of it. So he was above the nisab at this point, but he dipped down all the way to level zero. Now he climbed back up, and he's reached his point. So that's when the zakat will be due on him. Because the first time he went above the nisab was here, Shawwal. So based on that, he'll let 1 year pass, and then he'll pay the zakat there. Imam Malik, Shafi'i, and Ahmad say that whatever is accumulated throughout, through profiting in business throughout the year will be added to the existing nisab. If there is no nisab, then the year will start from the time nisab is complete. So the difference here is the majority, they say, anytime you dip down below this level of nisab, like right here, you start from there over. You start over. You no longer qualify. Abu Hanifa says it doesn't matter if you go up and down, up and down, up and down. Number one, as long as you don't end up at zero, and as long as you end up on top at the end of the year, you pay zakat. If you do reach zero, then start your year over. But the majority, they say no. As long as you come down anywhere below this line, even one time, now from here, your new year is going to start. Okay, that's the difference of opinion in this issue.